CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back. We've just had our Leadership Masterclass with Professor Theo Veltzmann. That was a wonderful conversation. Enjoyed that very much. And, of course, you can get that podcast at any time on the Cliff Central website. And just watch our social media for it. Now we have our leader interview. So it's our leader interview, which we always have, the second half of the Leadership Masterclass, Professor Shirley Zinn. It's the Professor Day today. She's with us. We're doing the interview on Skype. I'm still on my balcony here with the bush to my left, Kruger National Park. It's a beautiful day, fairly hot, but it's just wonderful to sitting here with the fresh air and having a conversation about leadership, more particularly authentic leadership, with Shirley Zinn, who's on the line from Cape Town. Welcome, Shirley.
Thank you so much, Adrian and Mr. Grunewald. Lovely to have you again on the show with us. It's a wonderful day in Cape Town, so coming to you live.
Competing with me, Cape Town. Well, it's great to have you with us. I think a quick synopsis of your career. I got to know you when you were the HR exec at NetBank. I was with you, that's where I think I got to know you. So maybe just give us a bit of a background. You come from humble beginnings. It's in your book. We'll talk about your book in a moment. But your career, what did you do before NetBank?
Well, Alan, I started off as a teacher, a high school teacher. I taught English, high school English for 4 years. And that was because I had a government bursary in order to be able to just finish a first degree. I majored in English, Latin, and sociology and did a higher diploma in education. And then I had to teach back for 4 years, which I did. I then went on into teacher education at the University of the Western Cape as a lecturer for about 10 years. I was in the Faculty of Education, and I was in the training of teachers at the time. And I finished a master's, honors and a master's while I was doing that in education, and went on to do a second Harvard second master's at Harvard University in education, and a doctorate in education at Harvard, and then came back. Wanted to work really badly in the Western Cape Education Department, but that didn't quite pan out as I was hoping. So made a detour into corporate and landed up as a training manager. So really it was for education and all about human development, which is key to my passion. And sort of, you know, the rest is history. I sort of just kept going along the human resource development and management, and then into leadership roles, the last of which was Standard Bank and NetBank, as you mentioned, when we met probably more than 10 years ago now. And there was SARS just before that, where I was general manager of HR under Pravin Gordhan, Reckitt Benckiser's, Africa, Middle East, fast-moving consumer goods. So it's been some interesting roles. And right now I'm doing a piece of work for Woolworths, building a group HR function for Woolworths Holdings, amongst other things, serving on a few boards as a non-executive director, and serving on the Council of UCT and doing some academic work as an adjunct professor still. So lots of things going on, Adrian, as usual.
Yes, as usual, and your time is always busy, so we're so appreciative of your setting aside some time to be with us today. But you are very dedicated to studying, to education, to academic some academic route. What do you think fueled that, or what inspired you to continue down that road?
I think what happened in my life is quite key to that. I grew up in a very, very difficult financial and socioeconomic circumstances with parents who understood the importance and necessity of education, but didn't have the financial capability to assist me through it, but really did support, you know, the whole message about, you know, continuous learning is absolutely critical, and that would be my liberation. In the end, I didn't quite come to grips with that at an early age. But, you know, my father was always on about having a vision and making something of your life and not getting caught up, you know, in the trappings of socioeconomic downside that we still see very much happening to our communities and our youth. We're still trapped in special arrangements from the old regime, very much despite all of the work that has been done. And so for me, education was going to be the big ticket, you know, out of all of that. And so I didn't intend to, you know, get together a long string of degrees necessarily, but the one thing just led to the other, and it was very empowering to be able to understand that one can actually do something that you didn't think you could do. You could actually, you know, if these teachers in matric didn't sit me down and say, you know, you're not the brightest pea in the pod here, but you actually have potential to do something like go to university. If somebody didn't say that to me when I was 17 years old, then I might never be having this conversation with you here today. And therefore, for me, education is absolutely central to unlocking the potential of this country, the economic potential, dealing with the inequalities, dealing with poverty, dealing with joblessness. And I'm very excited about the possibilities that education can bring, and I'm very inspired by that.
But surely... Okay, now we can't disagree with that. We can't for a moment disagree with that. And you might be a strong testimonial for the liberator that education can be. But it can't just be that. So your character, who you are, the essence of your being inside, anyone I meet or anyone I would speak to who knows Shirley Zinn, I don't know, I would doubt that you have any enemies out there, but if you've been in serious leadership roles, then you would always have people who don't necessarily like you, but they'll respect you. But my feeling is you're just a kind, good, solid person with depth of character and integrity. And some of those things don't necessarily come through education. They come through upbringing. They come through just who you are. So let's put that parallel to, I've met a lot of people who've got their PhDs and they're very educated. Man, they haven't achieved what you have. So education itself cannot be the liberator in isolation, yes?
I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, I think if I look at my upbringing, and it's wonderful that you have your dad on the show here, because, you know, my parents played such an important role in my life, even though they didn't have the benefit of education, the one can even begin to remotely talk about in any way, shape or form. I think, you know, the whole message, early message about vision and goals and making something of yourself. And in addition to that, having a sense of values, which is a little bit what my mother brought to me, you know, in terms of, you know, live your life with meaning and purpose. Have a directed and purposeful life that is based on respect for other people, for dignity, in terms of how we treat people, that seeks to make an impact in other people's lives, that is based on humility, and that you will be able to overcome huge adversity if you can just try and do some act of kindness for somebody every day and live in service of others. I went to our high school where the Latin is non ministrari sed ministrare, which means not to be served but to serve. And I think that was such an important enduring motto in my life in many ways. It's not always been easy, you know, to try to achieve that. But I think in many ways, we've actually forgotten to do that. And often when you get into high positions with high titles and power and all of the trappings that go with it, you know, one forgets who you actually are in all of that. You forget your authenticity and you forget your purpose, that you actually... In terms of our own Ubuntu, we are here because of others. We are here because of our humanness and our humanity. And we should never actually lose sight of that. We need to draw courage from that. And we need to make sure that we base our principles and decisions on this. And we remain. And I think the world's also looking for leaders that are credible, that are trusted, that are respected. And that you can come with whatever qualifications in the world that you can master. But if you can't bring people to a place where your value adds value and your values are actually the things that drive your decisions, that drive your behavior, that drive your engagement, that drive your leadership style, if you do not have that, there is a huge vacuum that is going to not enable you to be as effective as you might be. So for me, those two things are very, very key. And there's quite a lot of research, quite interestingly, that I discovered, especially through my Nedbank and SARS work, that, you know, vision, values, and purpose are absolutely critical in the right combinations.
Okay. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Before we go on to some statements from your book that I think to you describe authentic leadership or authentic leaders, that's your book, Swimming Upstream. And we're extracting some of these thoughts that we'll be sharing with our network after the show even, in a moment. But just give me your views on South Africa's leadership culture at the moment. Where are we now? Where may we be heading? What should we be doing better? Let's just take a minute or two on that. Because you are an influencer in society, not just probably not just one of the top women leaders, but one of the top leaders in our country that whose views matter.
Adrian, I'm a bit concerned about, you know, where we are as the Africans and the current leadership, particularly the current leadership values and ethics and sense of purpose. And unfortunately, we are driven by a sense of, you know, self sort of, you know, focusedness. We're not looking at, you know, how we can build our economy. We don't have a single-minded vision around how are we going to unify ourselves around this, the single important thing that we have to do, which is to grow our economy so that our people can have their dignity back. We can provide education. We can provide jobs. We can eliminate poverty and inequality. We are directionless, if I have to be absolutely honest. I feel that the whole challenge is around people trying to trust leaders, they can respect people that are ethical, people that are aware of the impact on society, they are aware of their words and their behaviors, that people are sick and tired of toxic leadership behaviors and dishonesty and corruption constantly oozing out of every crevice, every single day. And there are wonderful things that people are doing to try and stem the tide. But I think when you have a situation and you have to be very, very honest and speak out, I mean, I think it was Martin Luther King that said, there are certain times in our lives that you actually cannot be quiet any longer. Because if you're quiet, you're complicit. And we need to work out how we eradicate the toxic rot that has set into our leadership in terms of being self-serving, greedy, power-hungry, and couldn't care less about the people that they're supposed to be leading. And I know it's hard to say that. It's very, very hard to say that. But unfortunately for people on the ground, that is the reality that people are experiencing.
Mm. And we're all trying to do our bit, aren't we, to try and do something about that. But it's got to start at the top. Now, surely you have seen cultures transform. And I know from SARS to Nedbank and other places, you have worked alongside great and probably not so great leaders. You yourself are now considered one of the most influential leaders in South Africa. Let's explore statements that, to you, describe authentic leadership best. And there are many. I've extracted a few from your book. I'll mention them and then just take a minute on them. We've got to keep our eye on the time, but just take a minute on explaining that specific principle and then we'll move on to the next one. We'll just go through them point by point and pull Louis in for his, we call him the old man on the show, to bring some wisdom as well. The first thought that I'm going to pull from your book, Swimming Upstream, which everyone raves about, I haven't read it yet and I want to, is you say life tosses us curveballs, adversity, and even tragedy. It's how we rise up from this despair that matters. And I know you've had your own tragedy and pain in your life. Some comments on this specific thought.
I think, Arjun, for me, this was quite key. So for listeners who haven't had the opportunity to read the book, I think I've, you know, in the true Dickens sense, I've had the best and the worst of times in life, generally. And, you know, the essence of the book really is to try to tell a story about, you know, what happens to us in life, and that despite adversity, especially to our youth, I think, there are ways and means to overcome this. And so, yes, so life has tossed me some amazing opportunities, like the opportunity to study at Harvard, like the opportunity to work in great organizations in South Africa with some great leaders, with the ability to do some amazing work, with especially around creating humanness in organizations and values-driven organizations. But for me, from a couple point of view, we were in a terrible accident. We lost our only child. He was 7 years old. This book was published last year. He turned 21. It is a way for me to say, how can I take this huge negativity and turn it on its head into something that will be provide some optimism, some optimism for people who are battling to find hope in this life and the struggle with despair. A large proportion of our communities and our youth particularly are battling with all sorts of challenges, and they don't see a way out around this. I believe it was important to find, you know, your own internal reserves in order to pull yourself out of your despair. It is important also to get help when you need help, which is the other thing we don't do. We think somehow, you know, things will just come right. And I think the third thing is to surround yourself with people who will uplift and inspire you and take you forward. Now, as we talked before, there are lots of toxic people, a lot of negative people, a lot of naysayers, doom and gloom people who will tell you what more of what you can, what you're not able to do, okay, what is impossible. But I want to say in my own authentic way that, you know, if we don't have hope, what do we have? Somebody said to me the other day, how can you inspire hope? How do you talk about hope in a world of such abject poverty, where we've been doing everything we possibly can to uplift people, and you still talk about hope? Hope doesn't put bread and butter on the table. But my point is, if you don't have hope and you don't have it deep within your soul, I mean, it's very much like the Richard Barrett book. He talks about liberating the corporate soul. If you haven't liberated that within yourself, personally as a human being, you are never going to be able to unlock that beautiful magic that resides in people. That's called talent. That's able to come out when somebody says to you, you know what, we believe in you and you have potential.
Louis Kaminier, who lost his child at the age of 21, my brother, so obviously knows a bit of your pain. Interestingly enough, as you mentioned, last year your child would have been 21. Louis, quick comments on that before we move to the next point.
Surely it's really inspirational to listen to you. We appreciate your spirit. Surely, just to put in context the state of the curveballs, so perhaps many people out there understand it more fully. If you should take away all the curveballs you've had in life, who would you be?
That's a fascinating question. I think the curveballs have a way of shaping one's life and making one respond quite differently to, you know, various situations. I look at life potentially very differently from what I might have if I had just had the, you know, motherhood and apple pie kind of life. I think that in a way, you know, having had struggles and having had curveballs and adversity and tragedy and pain sometimes enables one to appreciate, you know, the beauty of life and appreciate what you are able to do with life despite the complexities. I think I might have been a potentially a different kind of person, I suppose, who just expects things to sort of happen and wouldn't have to work so hard to pick myself up to actually look out for others and try to make a difference and live a life of impact and purpose. I would potentially be more complacent and more kind of, you know, just, you know, accepting of you know, situations around me without really asking the hard questions and rising up with courage. And I would probably live with a lot of anxiety and fear. Right now, yeah, we all have a measure of anxiety and fear and challenges that we have to take on board every day. But when you've raised it to the kind of max, I think, that some of us have lived through, I think, you know, it does, you find that resilience and tenacity within yourself that you actually would not have imagined was possible if we didn't have.
What Shirley is saying, I think the core message is clear, Shirley, that we must stop trying to avoid all kind of adversity or opposition or confrontation in life. We really become almost dead without the ability to overcome these things, and you reflect that in your comments. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so the next thoughts, powerful stuff there. Our curveballs are who we in a sense become. We become our curveballs.
Yeah.
And we don't. If we really want character, then live through the 27 years in jail, and maybe your character will become what you hope it should be, and what the world needs. The next thought you've got describing authentic leadership is think about what you could achieve if you were not afraid. Yeah, so I wrote something on my Facebook this morning about afraid. I think it's a powerful principle. Shirley, expand a little bit on this one just for a minute.
I think it's so important to trust your own internal instincts often. And I think that, you know, if you come through a life of relative hardship, and you've been single-minded in trying to, you know, work your way through it, it's very much like the Madiba magic. You know, it's courage is not the absence of fear. A lot of people think that you don't actually have emotions because you're nothing to faze you, really. You know, you can just about throw anything at me or possibly, you know, come back from it in some way, shape, or form. But I think it mustn't be, the kind of resilience that becomes a something that's insignificantly defined and says, oh, well, you can just bounce back from anything. You're just so amazing. You can do this. No. It's absolutely something very deep that you have to work on every single day. It's something that you have to practice. It's something that you have to think about. It's something that you have to reflect on. You know, you don't get better at this stuff if you are not working on yourself every single day to be a better version of yourself with purpose. You have to wake up in the morning and say, how can I do what I did yesterday? How can I do that just a little bit better? And that mindfulness and that being in tune with your own capabilities and, you know, shortcomings and sharing with others and engaging with others and learning every single day as you go, that is absolutely important. And that is what deals with anxiety and fear. A lot of anxiety. And you know what, Adrian, there is so much anxiety in this world. There's so much to be frightened of. There is so much to be concerned about. There are reams and reams of worries that people have. I have sat on medical aid boards and trusts for hundreds of thousands of people. I see what medication they're taking every day. I see what's worrying them every day in the workplace, in their private lives. And, you know, it's a huge cost and burden on the system, but it affects our communities and eats away at our people and our families. I think it's something we must take a lot more seriously. People need to not be led by latest fads, but people need to live coherent lives. They need to live lives that are, you know, clearly, you know, thought through, and that this. Imagine you could take away anxiety. What would be possible in this world? You know, a lot of us, our potential is never unlocked because we always worried if I play that violin in public or if I sing that song, you know, off tune, or if I take that to my first presentation in front of a large audience, and what will people think of me? You know, what will become of me? And so we have a lot of worries about all sorts of things. We think about what we were worrying about exactly last year this time. What became of the problem you were worrying about last year this time? And where are you today, and what are you worrying about today? So I think we must embrace our lives and move forward in purpose.
Yeah, and that is the next one that I want to bring onto the table. But that is that fear of failure, fear of what people think of us. Man, it holds us back so much. The next one, and Louis, you can come in also on this one. The next thought that describes authentic leaders, you've got living life with purpose and meaning. Devote yourself to this, you say. A little bit on this one?
I think, you know, more and more, and I think for leaders today, especially Adrian, purpose is absolutely critical. You have to be able to get up in the morning and say, what is this life all about? Why am I here? Am I doing what I'm doing to the very best of my ability? And be anchored in that. So if your purpose is, I want to make a difference to children's lives, I want to make a difference to the lives of my community, I want to be a great professional, I want to be an astute and respected leader, I want to address poverty, whatever it is that is your key driver in your life, you must find it. Because that then determines, you know, what is your vision for your life, what are the values and what are the plans and goals that you want to set for yourself? And how do you start to then do that? Because I think it's in the actual doing of it. It's not just the plan. A lot of us have plans and ideas. That's one thing. Another thing is to actually get up and go and do it. And for me, what was important in life is I've always been able to pull together the whole, you know, what I love doing, and what I find, and what makes meaning and purpose for me, and be able to pull those two things together. And there's nothing that gives me more joy than seeing someone grow and thrive and come from a place, you know, of real challenge to a place of real being able to thrive and be the very best that they can be. And even if it's little incremental seeds every day, if you can plant that, there is so much joy and personal fulfillment that comes out of that for me. And being able to pull my professional and personal and just internal workings around that together into something called purpose, for me has been quite an astounding, you know, unleashing of my own ability to feel like I'm living a life of meaning and purpose.
Louis, do you want to come in there quickly before we go to the next one?
Okay, I think, Shirley, what you're saying strikes very deep. 10 years ago, possibly people could get away with leaders by being functionally competent, focusing on goals out there. The truth is, to achieve the depth of things you speak about is really an inner journey first. And surely reflects a whole attitude. The passion comes from within you. And that's a one of character that Arjun spoke about previously as well. We mustn't bluff ourselves. We need to invest in ourselves, develop that kind of inner peace or inner confidence that Shirley speaks about. It's very important. If we don't nourish ourselves, we will do things that are politically correct, but there will be no real passion, and we will not last authentically. So she's just confirming a vital point. It starts at the beginning. Every day we should default back to that inner confidence and peace within ourselves. Not so sure. That's where our values, our vision comes from. And we appreciate immensely your passion, because you're really speaking about the real Shirley, who you are and try to be. So this is a lesson, I think, to all of us, I think.
Shirley, another thought that describes wise and authentic leadership to you is a very practical one that I like, and that is find a sponsor and trusted advisor. Just give us a few seconds on this one. I'm sure it's helped you in your career.
And that's such an interesting one, because there are so many things that happen in people's lives, both professionally and personally. Many people have nowhere to go. Why? Because there's a trust deficit in this life. They don't want to share their inner workings. They don't want people, you know, they don't have the confidence to step out of themselves. They keep everything, really locked up within themselves. And I think that it is because we can't find people we trust and who truly believe in us, or sometimes it's just in our own heads, actually, also sometimes, mostly, I think. We need to find, so people are always looking for coaches and mentors. I don't know how many questions like that I get. Please, will you be my coach and will you be my mentor? And you know what? It's not the textbook definition of a coach and a mentor. It is, please, will you just give me a little bit of time so that I can share some of my thoughts with you? I can soundboard, I can confidentially lay myself bare in a way to someone that, you know, will listen and won't judge me. And I think, you know, there are so many people in this world looking for just a few minutes of your time, you know, to be able to do that. And it's just amazing. I said to people, you know, I cannot be a mentor to you in an official way, and because there's just too many things for me to do and too many people asking the same question. But I'm prepared to listen to you, so call me anytime, SMS me, give me a shout. If I can talk to you, I will. This is a simple thing, Aileen. It costs nothing to share that with somebody. And so a show like this, where you're able to get people to just reflect and think and be exposed to other leaders and their thinking and engage with it, I think is so vital. So I just want to encourage you to continue to do that. So finding a sponsor is not only somebody who's just going to listen to you. It's also someone who's going to cover for you, going to look after you, going to advise you, going to challenge you, going to push you, you know. And that is going to maybe push you over that little line that you had, imaginary line that you said to yourself, that's my limitation, I can't go any further. That is the person you're looking to. And so those are the kinds of people that you need to surround yourself with. that will enable you to really be the best that you can be inside and on the outside. And I think that is what I was talking about when it came to, you know, sponsorship and finding people that you can trust in this world.
Professor Shirley Zinn, our guest, and we're at the end of our leadership interview with her, all about authentic leadership from her book, Swimming Upstream, which so many people are reading and being inspired by. Shirley, end off with a message to South Africa as one of our leaders. Just take a minute on that, share a message.
Thank you so much, Adrian. I'd like to appeal to the leaders of South Africa to please let's work together. Let's build this unity in our diversity. Let's wake up with a single-minded vision around this country to say, let's build a better life for all, as we said in our constitution and our founding documents. Let's build a better life for all through growing our economy. Let's focus all our energies and efforts on growing an economy that can then deal with our youth issues, our unemployment, our inequalities, and all the challenges that we face. Let us become true, mature, courageous leaders in the shape and the form that our Madiba would have liked us to have pursued, in terms of, you know, courage is not the absence of fear. Let's conquer our fears and let's treat people with dignity and inspire hope and respect, and let's choose ethical leadership. Let the corrupt stuff go once and for all.
Professor Shirley Zinn, thank you so much for joining us, and also Louis Groenewald, having a leadership conversation with such a wonderful person all the way from Cape Town. And from me, it's over and out here in the bush, and Louis Groenewald in Pretoria. Next up, our business masterclass with Richard Angus. Stay tuned. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you. CliffCentral.com.